This series is brought to you with the kind support of Wellington Management, one of the world's largest independent asset managers. Wellington believes in the importance of a diverse workforce, equitable opportunities for all colleagues to reach their potential, and an inclusive culture.
It was the best decision I've ever made. And also, it was the first decision I've made for myself. My biggest challenge was to love myself. I think that was the biggest challenge. And I consider my trans experience a privilege. Society looks at being trans as being a minority, and I look at trans as being triumphant against life's obstacles, being resilient against adversity, and being an authentic, noble success.
I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to this 50 Faces Focus series, in which we are celebrating LGBTQ plus professionals in a special series for Pride Month 2022. I'm joined today by Bryson Scholar Lee Downing, also known as Dr. Scholar Lee, who's an inspirational speaker, spiritual life coach, transformational leader, and a leadership consultant based in the Atlanta, Georgia area. As a Black man of trans experience, he has unique insights into the challenges of transition and cloaks his guidance in a deep spirituality. He is also the host of the Dr. Scholar Lee podcast and CEO owner of Trans Parent Life Conversations, a life coaching service for transgender non-conforming individuals and families to cope, heal, and overcome challenges. His program helps families create affirming, supportive, and healthy relationships with their gender variant loved one. In addition, Dr. Scholar is the author of the children's book, The Fruits of a Scholar, which will launch to the public in September of 2022. Educationally, he obtained a BA in psychology and two masters, a Master of Science in Management and Organizational Leadership, and a Master's in Philosophy. Dr. Scholar Lee will be receiving his PhD in Philosophy this year, 2022. Currently, he's doing his dissertation on the characteristics of trans-affirming parenting. Born and raised in New Haven, Connecticut, he now resides with his wife in the East Atlanta area, but frequently visits Connecticut to see his five-year-old daughter and family. In addition, he is blessed with a 15-year-old bonus son and a five-year-old bonus dog. You can follow Dr. Scholar Lee on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Dr. Scholar Lee. Welcome, Bryson. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
Well, that was a long list of credentials, and certainly you're doing fantastic work in the area of trans awareness and trans affirmation. But can we just go back a little bit to your background, where you grew up and what your early interests were?
Yeah, so I grew up in New Haven, Connecticut, born and raised. And as far as my interests, I've always loved to write, coach basketball. I played basketball from like grade school until my junior year of college. Those were always passions of mine. I actually coached basketball. I coached high school, and then I had coached travel team, also known as AAU basketball. I coached that for a few years. And then I coached D3 at Albertus Magnus College for a year for the women's basketball team. I was an assistant coach. So I had a little bit of coaching, and then I became a juvenile detention officer for the Connecticut Judicial Branch. So I was a state employee for about 7 to 8 years until I got injured and decided to just take ownership. I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur, so I just kind of took a leap of faith and went that way. As far as my inspirational speak, I've always been empowered to empower people and just make people feel good about themselves, especially being a triple minority, being Black and then being trans. On top of that, I like to call it the three-legged sword. But just being a triple minority, I always felt it was just essential and needed for people to just feel good about themselves. And I had an understanding of that experience and just wanted to empower people to live their truth, unapologetically be authentic, and just support people and their differences as much as possible.
And can you tell us a little bit about your own personal story? At what stage did you transition to being a man?
Yeah, so I knew I was different ever since I was 5. I always wished and wanted to be male as long as I could remember. I don't even want to say 5 years old, as young as I can remember. And being in a Black community, at least in my environment, I did not know of the transgender non-conforming population or community. I just knew that there were men who dressed in female clothing or drag queens, and you know, everybody knew a RuPaul and things of that nature, but I didn't know of, like I said, the gender variant community until I joined a LGBT Greek organization at the age of 29. And one of their subsidiaries was a trans man organization, Greek org. And I was like, man, that's interesting. So I'm looking, I happen to see a before and after picture. And I was like, this is who I want to be. I just felt 100% complete. I didn't feel that way when I was identifying as lesbian. I just felt that was just where I needed to be at the time, because all I knew was that women who liked women were lesbians. I didn't know anything else. And even using the term lesbian was a little bit too feminine for me. So I went under the term stud, as they like to categorize it. And at the age of 30 is when I decided, when I was informed of the transgender nonconforming population and just decided to do it. It was no hesitation. Spiritually, it was like 100% in alignment. And yeah, it was the best decision I've ever made. And also, it was the first decision I've made for myself. Yeah.
Well, that is a wonderful story. And the word stud is one that I absolutely love. And I'm going to remember it because it just seems like it's just perfect in your case. As far as, I think you mentioned a very important issue, though, which is around the use of language and the evolution of language, and how maybe the languages and labels that we have today, I mean, sometimes they may be perhaps the wrong ones, but we didn't even have that language, say, 2 decades ago. So maybe that has been an important part of your journey, was growing up when more language became available. What would you like young trans people today to know based on your experience? What wisdom would you like to share with them?
Trust yourself. I feel that is an obstacle that our youth are experiencing, is the lack of trust in oneself, because we are dependent. A lot of our living is dependent on our parents and on our leaders of today, whether they're school teachers or principals or what have you, coaches. And because we look at them as being older and experienced in life, we sometimes compare our transitions to that and find ourselves taking away from our authenticity or watering down our potency of being authentic to make them feel comfortable, or compromising who we are to make others comfortable. And I just empower our youth to trust yourself and to know that your differences are not a mistake, and that you were made to be different so you could create differences in this world. And it is needed for you to live your truth and be authentic at any level in which it brings you. And to just be bold. It's okay to be different, and it's okay to love your parents in that difference. And you don't love your parents any less, or you don't love the people who love you any less, because you choose to live and speak your truth and express your truth.
And let's move now to your career experience and your experience of LGBTQ+ inclusion. Can you talk us through that, maybe through looking at your initial workplaces, and now you're more independent? How inclusive were those environments?
So my work experience in the professional atmosphere, as far as in the work setting, when it came to transgender, there wasn't inclusivity at all. It was LGBT friendly, as they like to say. But when I was a juvenile detention officer, we had a youth who actually identified as trans, and she was basically stirring up a lot, because the organization and the structure of the building, as far as the policies, they were not in alignment with transgender youth. So here we have a transgender juvenile coming into our system, and they do not know what to do. They don't know if they should place her on the females unit or on the males unit. And there's a lot of safety precautions that do tie into that as well. So it kind of left them in a rock between a hard place. And this specific juvenile came into the system multiple times identifying as male prior to their transition. So when they came in this time, already on hormones and things of that nature, the system did not know how to really handle it. They did the best that they can, but it was interesting, because even being in the detention center, the juvenile was still receiving their hormone treatments in the facility. But it did cause a big stir, because certain officers could pat her down. And at the same time, she was on the females unit, but had a very aggressive history towards women as far as abuse and the program she was in and abusing those female officers. So it was very tricky. So as far as inclusivity, I think it really depends on, well, first, all organizations should be inclusive. But when you're looking at the judicial system, there are some safety measures that need to be taken into place on how to execute that efficiently when it comes to transgender nonconforming youth.
And how about now maybe setting the standard for other workplaces? How do you think that can be assured? One of the statistics I've heard is that there is actually a high level of perhaps underemployment or unemployment among the transgender population, that it can be quite difficult to secure employment. And that's provided that they secure the employment. Then, of course, once they get there, there may not be the gender neutral bathrooms or perhaps the inclusivity. Do you have any sense now as to what really works in order to promote inclusion?
Honestly, I personally feel the workplace, work environments, they think too much, and they're allowing their personal biases affect their professionalism. And I think that's the biggest hurdle that we must get over, is the fact that you must leave your personal biases at home when you enter the workplace, because your personal biases should not be in an environment where it's pretty much not warranted. So when you have personal biases enter the workplace, that's where you have a battle, or it becomes frustrating, or quote unquote a challenge to be inclusive, because you're allowing your personal biases to take an effect or play a part in a decision where it shouldn't be. So I think that right there is the first hurdle, is leaving your personal biases at home. And when you leave that at home and you're taking a professional perspective, it's how can I create a safe workplace? How can I create a safe, supportive, affirming culture for everybody? Because it shouldn't matter if somebody's trans, it should fit in the same boat as if you're affirming and offering equal opportunities when it comes to Black individuals, Hispanic, Oriental, or Asian, or whichever ethnic background that is in the workplace. So I just feel like workplaces or professionals are making it very complicated when it's really not. You treat people equal, and that's just period. It shouldn't matter how they identify. And to make the bathrooms gender neutral, I mean, just take the signs off the doors, for Christ's sakes. I mean, you know, it's really not that. And just put stalls, just put bathrooms there. If the guys want to lift up the seat, lift up the seat. I mean, just make it pretty simple, I feel. I think people are just making it too much because they're allowing their personal egos. They're making egotistical decisions when you should be making professional decisions as a leader. How can I create a safe place for my followers to be comfortable? And being in a leadership position, they allow the title to define their leadership when it is their service that should be defining their leadership. And if you're executing quality service, also known as servant leadership, you will find that your followers, your employees will be high performing. Why? Because you care. You show a sense of compassion. You show a sense of, when it comes to ethics, you're being ethical. You're being respectful. You're not violating somebody's personal space or identity because you have a personal issue or you have a personal belief system that should not be accounted for in a professional environment. So when it comes to the workplace, I think organizations should really just breathe in, breathe out. Okay, breathe in compassion, breathe out the personal biases that they have, and focus on how can I create affirming, supportive, and safe. The key word is safe.
I wanted to ask you about that because affirmation is key to your journey that you're on now in terms of the life coaching that you're doing and being a transformational leader. Can you talk to us a little bit about affirmation? You mentioned, how does an employer create an affirmative environment?
Well, the first question is, how can I help you? And you'll get your answer from, so if I'm getting hired for an organization who's still trying to create an inclusive, a trans inclusive or gender inclusive environment, and I'm open with my identity, because you often don't find that in a workplace. So if I'm open, the questions I feel that should be asked to affirm who I am is, first, what are your pronouns? What do you prefer? And you don't even have to be openly trans, honestly, to ask somebody what pronouns do they prefer. That's like asking somebody, what name do you want me to call you? What's your legal name so I could pay you correctly, okay? But do you have a preferred name within this workplace? It's like the workplace is another family. And if you look at it like that, we know that our mom's name is whatever, our parents' names are whatever, our cousins' names are whatever, but we also got nicknames for them. And those are the nicknames they prefer, or those are the nicknames that help us identify whatever outside of their name. So that is affirming. Asking what pronouns do I prefer? What pronouns? Who do you identify as? Things like that. Ask questions that aren't harmful. And harmful questions would be, you know, did you get bottom surgery or did you get you know, if somebody wants to give that information voluntarily, let them give that. But you're not going to ask the average person or a cisgender person, did they get bottom surgery? Okay. Or whatever is going on. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong to have that question come across your mind, but to ask it, I think you probably should think twice. So when it comes to affirming behavior, just give me voice to communicate and take in that information, actively listen and ask me, what do I want or what would I prefer or what is my vision of a safe workplace for me? And then you'll get your answer when it comes to affirmations and inclusivity. Is it affirming somebody's voice, letting them know that they were heard and actually implementing what they suggest? Because, yeah, you know, if you ask me what I envision and 5 years go by and nothing's been done, I'm just feeling like you just wanted to meet a status quo or you just wanted me to waste breath.
That is so interesting. And it's actually just about basic human dignity, isn't it? The questions one asks and one shouldn't ask. Yeah. I just want to ask you one last question. You mentioned being a triple minority, and it does seem that perhaps underrepresented ethnic groups and transgender, when that intersects, there is perhaps a particular challenge. Does it come from maybe community issues, cultural issues? Do you find that other members of your community that are a triple minority have any particular issues?
Absolutely. Being a Black trans man or being Black and trans, period, in the Black community, it can create unsafe measures. As we can see, our Black trans sisters are being harmed, murdered by the dozen. And when you're talking about, and I really truly feel it associates or aligns in some way with the affiliation that women in general are placed under, the minority status of being female. Because when you have females who transition into men, such as myself, our safety precautions aren't as risky than our sisters are. And it's just being transparent, at least from my experiences. Now, do we have safety? Yes, I could get pulled over by a white cop and I have a whole different type of issue now. I have now transitioned my safe zones, as I like to say, because when I identified as female, I had, as a stud, I should say, I had certain things that didn't concern me, like getting pulled over. If I got pulled over, I didn't have to worry about being a Black man and being antagonized or what have you. But now that I'm a Black man, now if I get pulled over and if I go to jail, what's going to happen to me? Because the jail systems are not equipped for individuals like myself. So those are different type of safety measures that have been transitioned. So when it comes to ethnicity, I definitely do feel that you do go through unique experiences amongst being transgender, for sure, because in the Black community, they don't speak much. They barely want to speak about being gay and being lesbian or having gay friends or lesbian friends. They only want to have conversations about that. Forget about being transgender. Some don't even know about the transgender community. So now it's a whole different ball game. And me being raised in a double religion, my father's side was Baptist, my mother's side was apostolic. How do you tell them that you're trans? You know, I had faithful, you know, my grandparents go to church faithfully, and all they knew is that my grandmother had a grandson and a granddaughter. Now when she go to church, she's talking about she got two grandsons. Well, what happened to the granddaughter? So that's a transition for her. So as far as when it comes to being a minority, you're kind of like, I like to say sometimes that I'm oppressed by the oppressed. And I always question myself, like, how are you an oppressed population oppressing other populations? That always kind of tickled my mind because it's kind of like reverse bullying. Bullies are most likely experiencing some form of abuse at home, at school, or somewhere as to why that they're transitioning that emotion and that experience onto other people. So when you have the history of Black individuals, the Black community, and now you're oppressing within your own population when it comes to the LGBT community, especially the transgender community. You're denying, neglecting, and isolating us. And our lives matter too while you're out there promoting Black Lives Matter. Yeah, so that's just my personal experience as far as my community, but I'm sure the Hispanic community and other variations of ethnic groups are experiencing their own unique experiences within their community as being trans.
So Bryson, you're an incredibly positive person, and certainly your whole trajectory now to culminate with this, that your current mission, you've certainly overcome and shown resilience in the face of some setbacks and challenges. Can you maybe share with us some way that you found that resilience, or you were able to draw on a reserve of strength? What lessons did you learn from maybe some of the challenges that you faced?
Some of the challenges, my biggest challenge was to love myself. I think that was the biggest challenge. And I consider my trans experience a privilege. That has always fueled me, honestly, now that I have a spiritual approach, perspective when it comes to my trans identity and my trans experience, I should most say. But yeah, it was just loving myself. I realized that the love that I had for myself was not healthy. It was toxic. And that love was a love of people pleasing. I wanted to make my parents happy. I wanted to make my family happy. So I did what they did. And they interpreted that as me being good or behaving well. And then all trajectory and all for sake purposes, I just wanted to please them. I wanted to get good grades so they could clap for me and smile. You know, it's not that I really enjoyed school too much because some of the information I just really wasn't interested in. Now, I love to learn. I was always a scholar by nature because I just love learning. I always keep my pen and pad with me. But you go to school, you get good grades so your parents could be smiling. They could brag about it to their fam, to their friends and stuff like that. So I found myself in this people-pleasing mindset. And I played basketball even for as long as I did because I wanted to make my mom happy. I was scared to quit because I knew that she enjoyed going to the games and basically a little bit living her life through me. So I didn't want to let her down by not playing basketball, but I was burnt out. I was so busy sacrificing who I was to make others happy. I was compromising who I was to make people feel comfortable around me. And saying no was the hardest thing for me. So when it comes to resilience, I started saying yes to me and was okay with that because even that was a grieving stage for me, saying yes to myself and saying no to others. And creating boundaries for myself was an obstacle. And it was like, okay, but at the same time, in me creating that boundary, it was elevating the love I had for myself. It was elevating the self-respect. It was elevating the success in me. It was watering those seeds of success and confidence and having heart and being outstanding and leading my life authentically and with the respect for myself. And that's what being a scholar is to me. And it's being a scholar of life. And that's how I became resilient, is just continuing to water those seeds of success and confidence and heart, and knowing that my uniqueness is what allows me to stand out and lead my life in the way that I do, unapologetically authentic. Now, was there challenges? Absolutely. I've had toxic relationships, abusive relationships, verbally, emotionally, physically. And when I reflect on it, it's because what I was receiving, I was also giving myself. I was harming myself. I didn't have a love for myself to say, no, this is not right. No, I will not tolerate this. No, this is the boundary that I'm setting. And I am who I am. And if you don't love me, that's okay. I looked at love as something I received outside of myself. And when I started looking at love as something that I should be giving myself, then it's a different story. Now my relationships are healthy because the love that I'm getting from my wife or I'm getting from my children is an addition to the love that I already have for myself. It cracks me up when people say that they date and you go to people and you become whole. No, you should enter all relationships whole and everybody adds to your wholeness. So you should be 100% and everybody else adds the extra. And that is what I didn't learn because I constantly was loving outside of myself and trying to get validation from others. And is this a good idea? Is this a good idea? I had terrible decision-making skills. But when I was conscious of the transgender population, I felt affirmed because all my wishes and thoughts, they were validated. Because prior to that, I just wished that I was a guy. I just had dreams and woke up depressed because this was my reality. I felt myself settling in this female machine or body that I have to navigate life through. And it was very hard. So when I became conscious, I'm like, okay, this is what I'm doing. And I was okay telling my family that this is what I'm doing. And if you're not okay with it, I'm okay with letting you go. I'm okay with that because I've given you 30 years of my life uncomfortable. I've compromised that for you. So now that I'm choosing to live my truth and be happy in it, you can either continue to enjoy the ride or you can get off. And that's just it. And is that easy to do? Absolutely not, because you love your parents, you love your grandma, you love your family. And I was blessed to have a family who was very supportive of that. So when it comes to my personal journeys of being resilient, I just empower everybody. The first step is to learn you, love you, and what does love look like for you? Make your own definition. It's great to watch TV and movies and look at our environment, but you become a product of your environment because you have not taken time to learn yourself and create the definitions. I had to redefine masculinity in my trans identity because even me transitioning from female to male, I started aligning myself with the binary ways of being a male. And I said, hold on, I have to redefine that because what's the point of transitioning? So I'm all about redefining labels. And when you look at transness through that scope, we're all trans in our unique way, because what have we not triumphed over? What life obstacles are we not resilient, or what adversities have we not been resilient over? And who isn't living their truth? And who doesn't want to live their truth and be a noble success at the end of the day? So, and that's more of an empowering statement than an undermining statement and making somebody feel bad for being trans. No, I'm blessed to be trans. I was privileged to experience identifying as a female and now identifying as a male. I think it's the greatest opportunity that God could have given me. And I'm able to connect with various genders because of that experience that I've had in my past and that I continue to experience today.
Well, thank you so much, Bryson. We are privileged to have a scholar like you committed to sharing your mission of loving yourself, promoting affirmation, joy, and acceptance. I think it was important that you highlighted the dangers of people pleasing, and it's been my distinct pleasure to capture your story. And I will take away your message of being triumphant, resilient against life's adversity, towards being a noble success. I can't thank you enough for sharing your wisdom with us.
Thank you so much. I'm honored for you having me.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to our 50 Faces Focus series. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear more inspiring professionals on their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest. 'Cause I was made to be free.